Influencers is brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Soya Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. Carib Construction. Real-Time Sound Studios. And Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out. Welcome to Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM, and I am your host, Lady Shima. And on this radio show, we take you into the world of leaders within Bahamian society and the global community to give you insight on how they use their influence to bring about positive change. We provide this platform for influencers to inspire our listeners with their personal stories on how they maneuver and strategize to still be impactful and influential, even in this new norm environment post-COVID-19. It is our hope that the stories and insight of the influencers we bring to you will inspire you to use the power of your influence to bring transformational change to your immediate environment, Bahamian society, and for some even across international divides. And today we take you into the mind of a 21st century leader who believes that the time has come for the Bahamian electorate to remove the reins out of the hands of a two-party system which has dominated political governance and control since 1967 to this present day. She says that the time has come for a new generation of leaders. Indeed, she says, the time has come to break the stronghold of the FNM and the PLP. Today we welcome influencer Arinthia Komolafe, leader of the Democratic National Alliance, a.k.a. the DNA. Today, we discuss for part one of a two-part series, the Bahamas under a DNA-led government. All this and more when we return here on Influencers on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Soya Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Start your day the right way. 7Seas.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of 7Seas cod liver oil. 7Seas cod liver oil is a rich natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with 7Seas cod liver oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with 7Seas.
At Carib Construction and Project Management, we do three things. We give you exactly what you want at the best possible price while building at the best construction standards in the industry. So when making that big investment in building a home, apartment, or commercial complex, trust our over 20 years of professional experience in architectural drawing, design, and electrical. We even offer complete packages with property and construction included. See our impressive portfolio at caribconstruction.com or call us at 341-4466. Welcome back to Influencers, and I'm your host, Lady Shima, and with me today is influencer and leader of the Democratic National Alliance, the DNA, Mrs. Arinthia Komolafe. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. How are you doing today, Lady Shima?
I'm doing well. I am so excited to have you here today. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. I find you to be intriguing. I find what it is that you're doing in the community is a very, very bold initiative. And so, of course, for today, we're talking about the topic, the Bahamas under a DNA-led government. And what would that look like? And how would this translate into the various industries, policies, rules that govern us as a nation? How would they impact the quality and longevity of the lives of Bahamians? But before we get into that, of course, I want to talk about the woman, Arinthia Komolafe. What are those core values that really govern the person that you are?
I think it's simply wrapped up in a mantra that I have. It's God, family, country. And literally, that's how I live my life. My commitment is to God and everything, every relationship that I have, my relationship with my spouse,
yes,
my relationship with my children, my relationship with other members of my family, and of course, the citizens and the residents of this nation, mm-hmm, flows from that initial relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I do, I like to be spiritually led, and I, mm-hmm, believe even this journey now, mm-hmm, with the Democratic National Alliance and entering this world of politics is a spiritual journey, one that I would not have taken were it not for the guidance of the Lord and the Holy Spirit. And so for me, it's a simple, simple mantra: God, family, country, and I hold those things near and dear to heart.
Okay, God, family, and country. Let's talk a little bit about family, because we know that family, the founding unit of any society, the bedrock, actually. What is your philosophy on family?
Family is the unit. I mean, family, it pretty much is that first entry, when we enter life, that ecosystem that we find ourselves in, that environment, it shapes who we are, whether for good or for bad. The experiences that we have when we come up in the family unit, whether that was a broken family or whether that is what people would call, quote unquote, a wholesome family, that experience from birth, even into adulthood, shapes who we are.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Let's talk a little bit about a different kind of a family, and I'm talking about your political family. And I was there at the launch of the DNA. I was branded as a DNA on that night.
During
marketing. Yes. At the launch of 2011 during marketing services, but that's all right. And I remember the energy, the synergy in the room. There was only standing room because the Bahamian electorate now, by and large, they seem to be so excited about the possibility of this third party, another option. No more PLP, no more FNM. A new day has dawned in the Bahamas. That was the kind of feedback that I was getting in the room. And now I'm sitting here looking at the new leader, who happens to be a very intelligent woman, Bahamian woman, emphasis on the word woman. I want to ask you this, and it is so sad that this would even be a question that would need to be had. Was there any resistance to your interest in becoming the leader of the DNA as a result of you being a woman?
Absolutely. You would appreciate
that. That's
the
fact. A yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, there was. Yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Continue.
Absolutely. I think some persons think that it was just a joy ride up to the top there. You know, there were some strong pushback because, of course, first of all, this is politics. Persons are not accustomed to seeing a woman in the top spot in a political party in the Bahamas. We live in a very patriarchal society. It's male-dominated in politics. And, you know, it is obviously it was a novel concept for some people.
Yes.
But, I mean, nevertheless, you know, I mentioned earlier this whole journey and divine assignment.
Yes, yes.
You know, the fact that I'm a female, it's you know, a lot of attention is put on it because we've never had it before.
I really don't feel that it's here nor there, but yes.
Right, yes. But but for me, it's just me on a journey.
Wow.
Right? The person who sees me.
I love that description. Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, I can't hide the fact that I'm a female, and I'm proud of the fact that I'm a female.
Yes, of course.
I wouldn't change that. I wouldn't change that for one thing. But really and truly, you have to rise above even the challenges, the pushback, of that, and just say, hey, look, I'm presenting myself not as a female leader. I just happen to be female. But I'm presenting myself as a competent leader, one that has leadership vision and one that has vision for the time where we are living now. You know, and so once you move past that and persons are able to see that, then you start to win over more of the majority minority.
Okay, not as a female leader, but as a competent leader who happens to be a female.
Certainly.
And with that said, now let's talk a little bit about that leadership aspect. The former DNA leader, Branville McCartney, former Minister of State for Immigration and former Member of Parliament for Bamboo Town, he said at the launch, he said that the DNA believes in delivering a simple, clear, concise action plan for our nation. And the one simple truth that we firmly believe is that once you put people first, everything will take care of itself. There are many who believe that the powers that be as we speak in 2020 are not necessarily putting people first. What are your thoughts?
That's absolutely powerful, just the word itself. And, you know, putting people first is paramount, particularly when you're talking about politics. I always say to people that we know that the scripture tells us that it's God who promotes and it's God who pulls down. And if God raises up a leader, this is my belief and my observation and my interpretation, God always raises up a leader to look after the sheep.
Okay.
You know, when he spoke to Peter and he said to Peter, Peter, do you love me? And he asked him that question three times, almost to the frustration of Peter. And Peter said, yes, I love you. He said, well, feed my sheep, look after my sheep.
That's good.
You know, it was always about the sheep. And so if you're rising up in any form of leadership in this day and age, whether it's political, whether it's civic, whether it's religious, and you're not concerned about to sheep, then that is the number one offense to your position as a leader.
Of course.
Because it's all about the people that are following you. They should be first. Mm-hmm. Now, we do have instances where the leaders of today, when we talk about the political space, are putting people first. But which people are those? Mm-hmm. And what you find is that it's not the majority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more the minority to the exclusion of the masses. And that is the great offense that is really building up, causing a lot of frustration to build up within Bahamian society at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're realizing that where we were moving as a nation when we were first birthed, where we were moving from creating a middle class and a society that was not built on the haves and the have-nots, we see ourselves regressing now back to the point where it is us and them. It is the haves and the have-nots, and we are really carrying out a serious attack on those that are in the middle. And so you see that base is not broadening, but rather it's shrinking.
Excellent observation. And with that said, now, let's talk a little bit about the Bahamas under a DNA-led government. And it sounds interesting just that, you know, coming off of my tongue, just saying that. Listening to now what's going on with health, we're going to be talking about the various industries and ministries as it relates now to Bahamian political governance. We're going to start off with health simply because of what's going on now with the pandemic with COVID-19. The latest numbers as of this recording, 6,410 cases, new cases 42 here in New Providence, new cases 15 on Grand Bahama, new case 1 on Eleuthera. And of course, you know, sitting in the seat of the opposition or sitting in the seat of the onlooker, oh, why are they doing it like that? I wouldn't have done it like that. I probably would have done it like this. And granted to be so, though, it's all really in hindsight. I really want you to speak specifically as to those outstanding decisions that's really formulated where we are now as a people in our fight against COVID-19 and what you would have done differently as the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas under a DNA-led government.
Well, I think that's a very good question. And some may argue that 2020 is hindsight, but there are a lot of things that once you plan, you can have different outcomes. If we look at the nations around the world that actually planned, that actually had a strategy to attack this pandemic, you will see that their outcomes are a lot different from what we are experiencing here in the Bahamas. And I think when you're looking to be a great nation or you're looking to be the best that you can be, you're not going to look at the nations that are struggling. You're going to look at the nations that are succeeding. And so in talking about what would an Orinthia Komolafe, Prime Minister, would have done different from where we are, first of all, I want to say that we were out the gate on this situation even before the government or the official opposition was out the gate. And I had put forward at least two national addresses speaking to the issues and getting us prepared because as I was monitoring the movements globally, I knew that the Bahamas was not too far behind. Of course, if you see what was transpiring in the United States of America, you know that old saying that says that when America sneezes, we catch a cold. And unfortunately, that was true in this particular instance.
In so many instances.
Exactly. And so in that regard, we talked about getting the necessary personal protective equipment for the front liners. And you see that continued to be an issue for the most
part.
For
quite a while,
During this pandemic, we spoke about building the hospital up to capacity, getting the hospital up to capacity, because if you were looking globally in so-called advanced economies and developed nations, they were already talking about the fact, you can see what was going on in Italy. They were already talking about the fact that their very advanced healthcare systems were already crumbling under the pressure. And the Bahamas, whose healthcare system was already crumbling,
already challenged,
under normal circumstances, imagine a health pandemic and the challenges that that would present for us. So we spoke about that. And if they needed to get additional help from the outside professional help, whether that was with healthcare workers or whatever the case may be, that needed to be done. But more importantly, this is a war. By all intents and purposes, it's a war. If it were not, we would not have evoked Article 29 of the Constitution that put the country under emergency powers.
That's right.
Right? So this was a war. And if you're going to war, you're going to get the tools and the ammunition that you need to go to war.
Of course.
And in this instance, the tools that would have been necessary would have been test kits. Test kits and ensuring that you had laboratories
testing, that would be able
laboratories that will be able to process those tests. And also, if you needed to detain and isolate persons, you needed to have quarantine sites. And so we spoke about that. We can tell that the current administration was dragging their feet on all fronts.
What about financing that?
Well, the thing is, even in our personal lives, mm-hmm. if you are faced with something, if you're confronted with something, mm-hmm. you're going to go through every extent. If you have to borrow yes. from the neighbor to the left and the neighbor to the right mm-hmm. and the friend across the waters, you're going to borrow to whatever it is you need to be able to address that crisis that is confronting you. Mm-hmm. We, at that point, would have been 6 months into the fiscal year, mm-hmm. right? This is like February now.
Yes.
The fiscal year started July 1 in 2019.
That's correct.
I understand that we also had some challenges coming out of Hurricane Dorian.
Yes.
But if you knew that this pandemic was a real threat, that meant that you had to go back to the drawing board mm-hmm. and you had to look at your budget and you had to readjust.
Are you suggesting that they did not look at the pandemic as a real threat?
Honestly, I felt that they were asleep at the wheel, and I'll tell you why. Because in January and February of this year, both the PLP and the FNM launched their election campaigns. Mm-hmm. This was, first of all, the insensitivity of that was on the heels of Hurricane Dorian, mm-hmm. where there were still so many persons who were displaced mm-hmm. from Grand Bahama
that
and
so.
From Abaco. Mm-hmm. That was also insensitive on their part, because there were still so many persons who were declared missing mm-hmm. and persons who had not gotten closure
yes.
as to whether their families were persons who were in these trailers, which mm-hmm. at sometimes they said didn't exist, and then we came to find out that it did exist.
Exactly.
Right? Bodies yes. and trailers. Mm-hmm. So that was the first insensitivity on the matter, understanding where we were as a nation, mm-hmm. having two of our major islands out of commission mm-hmm. as a result of Hurricane Dorian. Mm-hmm. Then to say that the Minister of Health at the time, Dr. Dwayne Sands, he made the statement, it was not a matter of if, mm-hmm. but it was a matter of when.
When, that's correct.
So we knew that this was an impending threat, and mm-hmm. we knew that this threat was imminent.
So you believe that they were reactive as opposed to being proactive?
They were very much reactive because they were too busy getting an election campaign up off the ground. Mm-hmm. If you recall, the Prime Minister was traveling up
with
the Grand Bahama.
Pandemic.
Going, yes, mm-hmm. with a pandemic looming,
mm-hmm.
coming
that's right.
on us. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And spending funds for an election campaign mm-hmm. as opposed to getting the preparations ready and ensuring that those who would be on the front line would be first protected.
Now, when you say spending funds on an election campaign, give me specifics, because, you know, sometimes we say these things and they were spending on what exactly as it relates to election 2022 for the FNM.
Okay, so they call a town hall meeting a town hall meeting. Mm-hmm. When it wasn't, in fact, a town hall meeting, right? Everybody can see that it was a rally. It was held at a public venue, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
It was held at Edmund Moxie Center mm-hmm. on the outside. And if you recall, statements had to come out from various political parties. And we questioned as well, who funded this? Mm-hmm. Who funded this campaign? Where did these funds come from? Because it's being held at mm-hmm. a public, at a place that comes under Parks and Beaches,
yes.
which is an authority under the provision, under the proviso of the government. We wanted to know who was funding this. But
yes.
if you also recall, there were flyers that were coming out talking about FNM meetings, but it had the coat of arms on it.
Mm.
Well, you have to separate your party politics.
One's national and then one
from
is
your
party
government.
Politics, yes.
yes. Mm-hmm. And so there were all sorts of mixed messages. There was mm-hmm. confusion. And so, of course, the question would be, who is funding this?
Okay.
But in any event, it okay. served as a distraction mm-hmm. to the issues that were already here on the ground in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. which was the issue of Hurricane Dorian.
Of course.
And the issue that was on its way.
Okay, we're talking about health right now. So let's go now into NHI, the National Health Insurance. I had a very interesting conversation with Glanis Anna Martin, the MP for the PLP MP for Angleston. And she was talking about the NHI that is supposed to be this safety net for Bahamians to be able to go and receive quality health care. But she seriously challenged that and saying that it is not what they say it is, and that we have Bahamians who are not able to go and get a test, Bahamians who are not able to go and get a scan under this NHI system as it exists. What are your thoughts as it relates to a national health safety net for Bahamians?
We certainly, there should be one. Mm-hmm. And we have said on multiple occasions that we believe in universal health coverage. It's a fundamental mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. for the citizens of this nation and the residents of this nation to have access to affordable and sustainable health care.
Okay.
And it should be accessible.
Yes.
When we talk about NHI and the legislation that was put in place by the previous Progressive Liberal Party administration, mm-hmm. the challenge with NHI and the implementation at that point in time, and even now as we speak, mm-hmm. was exactly, it's exactly now being realized and actualized under this pandemic.
Yes, it's coming to the fore.
mm-hmm. where we spoke about the fact that you could not have true national health insurance with all of the deficiencies that you have in the system.
Mm-hmm.
The structural deficiencies that you have inside the system. A hospital that cannot accommodate and give up to adequate secondary level care
mm-hmm.
and tertiary level care medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, all of us have access to primary care. We can go to our own community clinics
mm-hmm.
and we can get a medical. We could even get a physical.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Right. But let's just say we had to do some diagnostic testing.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is not included mm-hmm. at the primary care level. That might come more now at secondary care.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get that everywhere. You can only go to some clinics and get that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a terminal illness and comorbidities, which is very high in the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
cancer,
mm-hmm.
whether it's cancer or some heart disease,
mm-hmm.
it is going to be very difficult for the average person to afford health care in this country and to have access to mm-hmm. health care. Just look at PMH. It is difficult for dialysis patients
mm-hmm.
to get treatment. And some of them can't get all the treatment that they need in a week because they just do not have the resources.
Okay, so what changes would the DNA bring to the fore now in speaking to the solutions that we need as it relates to
very good question. We actually just had, because over the last couple of years, we've been reviewing and updating our policies.
Mm-hmm.
And just last week, we had a constituency meeting in the Mount Moriah constituency where we unveiled what a revolutionary platform would look like for healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about the DNA government and what leadership and what the Bahamas under a DNA government would look like, I think about one word, revolution.
Oh, wow.
Right? We're transforming the way we do things in this country,
mm-hmm.
revolutionizing the way that we do things in this country. And we spoke about a very comprehensive healthcare system. First of all, you have to get the infrastructure correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's building, that's professionals, and everything else that flows from there.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And even governance, the
mm-hmm.
governance of the healthcare system, because we have too many bodies now.
Mm-hmm.
We have an authority that deals with the public health authority that
That's
deals
right.
with hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the Department of Health that deals with clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the NHI authority that
so
is
you would
supposed
put all
to
of that under one
it.
Umbrella?
We would put that under one umbrella called
okay.
the Bahamas Health Service.
Mm-hmm.
And each umbrella would function with departments and units underneath it, including the National Drug Prescription Program is also a part.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have laboratories that will also come underneath there. But in terms of talking about being able to access primary, secondary, and tertiary level healthcare services,
that's correct.
That will be across the archipelago where everybody would have access to primary care,
mm-hmm.
right? So you would have well-equipped clinics
okay.
on every island. But there will be regional hospitals where you would be able to get at the minimum secondary level, but then third level. And we propose that those three regional hospitals will be
mm-hmm.
one on the island of New Providence that will service the central Bahamas, one on the island of Grand Bahama that will service the northern Bahamas, which is Grand Bahama,
mm-hmm.
Abaco, Bimini,
yes.
Berry Islands, Andros and those. And then one on the island of Exuma,
mm-hmm.
which will service the southern portion of the archipelago.
Let's talk a little bit now about education. Of course, there was a lot of challenge with students being able to get their hands on devices, laptops, computers. I wouldn't really say phones, but even phones for those persons who would have to use phones. What would have happened differently if you were at the helm as it relates to education post-COVID-19, more so with the government school setting?
In the multitude of recommendations that we put forward to the government,
mm-hmm.
we did have a specific section just dealing with education.
Mm-hmm.
And this was at the beginning of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And this was even when we were getting ready to open school for fall semester 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'll deal with, what we spoke about at that point, understanding that the system was antiquated and not prepared for virtual learning,
mm-hmm.
we said to the government at the time in February, In February.
This is since February.
What? Yes,
okay.
since February. February mm-hmm. and March we've been speaking,
mm-hmm.
and even before the lockdown came,
mm-hmm.
before the emergency orders were
wow.
activated.
Okay.
And we had said through our Young Democrats Alliance that we don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
There's Google Classroom.
Mm-hmm.
My children who are in private school were using Google Classroom
mm-hmm.
infused into their education already.
Okay.
Google Classroom was made for situations like this.
Mm-hmm.
It was before its time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we recommended that they just create accounts for all of these children across the public sector, approximately
mm-hmm.
50,000 children perhaps,
mm-hmm.
and just use Google Classrooms and have the teacher to be able to give instruction via those means. Mm-hmm. However, we also understood the fact that internet access was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spoke about the partnerships that needed to be had with the local internet service providers
mm-hmm.
in the country to be able to provide hotspot areas or cards
mm-hmm.
that persons can use on their devices
mm-hmm.
to be able to access the internet.
Directly?
Yes,
using the
directly.
Cards. Okay.
And now, further down the line, getting ready for the fall semester of this year, we added even more recommendations, and I'm just going to go through the key ones.
Mm-hmm.
We added more recommendations in preparation for the new school year. And we said where there was a hotspot, where there was the hotspot for COVID and the rise in cases,
mm-hmm.
which was at that time New Providence and Grand Bahama and Bimini,
mm-hmm.
who had changed times as the epicenter
mm-hmm.
throughout the period, that there should be only virtual instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And it should there be virtual instruction that the government should invest a couple of million dollars, the calculations we did, that if they went directly to manufacturers in the United States,
mm-hmm.
whether it was HP or whether it was whomever, Samsung,
mm-hmm.
whatever the case may be, and say, look, we need X amount. We
to
said 75,000 devices,
mm-hmm.
because there are 75,000 children in the school system,
mm-hmm.
50 in the public and 25 in the private.
That's correct.
But you know the amount in the public increase
mm-hmm.
in the aftermath
as
of the pandemic,
right.
because of
the
economic crisis.
Yes.
So we said, procure still 75,000 so that teachers, administrators, and students would have access to devices,
mm-hmm.
and again put forward this recommendation to work with these service internet providers
mm-hmm.
and to put hotspot areas around the islands, wherever
mm-hmm.
these persons were, so that these children can have access to the instruction.
And what was the response to such a proposal?
Of course, you never get a response. Now, I would say that even though we speak and they may not acknowledge
mm-hmm.
that we would have said it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they did start to speak with the internet service providers a few months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the response in terms of the laptops, their response to that, from what I saw from the Ministry of Education's Facebook page, was,
mm-hmm.
hey, parents, here are some suggestions of what you should purchase for your children.
Mm-hmm.
This, here,
wow.
that. And it really spoke to an administration that was out of touch of the
mm-hmm.
realities
yes.
of what was going on with the average Bahamian
mm-hmm.
economically.
Yes, as a result
right?
of the pandemic.
And it would have cost them no more than $10 to $20 million to get
mm-hmm.
these devices and to be able to pay internet services for hotspot areas
mm-hmm.
for children to be able to have access.
Let me ask you this question. Where do you believe that the line should be drawn when it comes to personal responsibility and national obligation? Because here it is now, you're suggesting that, okay, the government takes on the responsibility of providing all of these devices for almost 100,000 students. Should that be the responsibility of the government, or should that be the responsibility of the parent and the government to be responsible for providing an environment that's conducive for the parents to be able to pay for the responsibilities that they have in the home?
Very good question and very good observation. And I would say to you, first of all, there must always be a balance between government responsibility and social responsibility,
mm-hmm.
because you're always going to have persons in your society that are going to be in need.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we have a social services department.
Mm-hmm.
But you are functioning under extraordinary circumstances.
True.
And you are in a crisis.
Yes.
And
yes.
almost overnight, you lost at least 50% of your workforce
mm-hmm.
lost their job.
Mm-hmm.
They lost gainful employment, right? And these are persons trying to keep roofs
That's
over
right.
their heads,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep food on the table,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep the light on and the water on in a pandemic,
mm-hmm.
right? So what would normally be a priority, and I think for the most part in our society, Bahamian people take care of their children.
Mm-hmm.
They look after their children.
That's their heart and
right?
passion for the most part.
One thing I can tell you about Bahamians,
that is very true. Yes.
They take care of their children.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see them approaching the government for help or assistance,
they
are in dire needs.
Mm-hmm.
So in this particular instance, when you find yourself in a crisis the way that you are, and if you look the world over, there were stimulus packages being had by multiple governments.
Mm-hmm.
So if we didn't want to say, well, I'm going to give John Doe $1,000 and Jane Doe $1,000 every month or whatever, because they may go and take that money and spend it on Amazon or whatever the case may be,
mm-hmm.
then you spend what you think you need to spend. So
mm-hmm.
in this particular instance, you know your children need an education. That's not just going to hurt the mother and the father, you know. That's going to hurt the nation. later.
That is
years
true.
Later, we yes. will pay for it mm-hmm. because these children are losing access to, especially during a time when they need this education.
That's right.
So you have to make the decision and say, okay, in this pandemic, we're going to have to take on more than we usually take on. I'm not saying that of the 75,000 children that are in the school system, because I would not have had my three children on the line for a device.
Mm-hmm.
But there are children in the country that truly need access to those mm-hmm. devices.
They don't have any other options.
Mm-hmm. Like the young people say, 242 to the world. We're just thinking about taking the Bahamas to the world.
You're playing on that 242 to the world.
Absolutely.
We are exporting Bahamian talent
yes.
to the world. Featuring the leader of the DNA, Mrs. Arinthia Komolafe. It just rolls off the tongue so beautifully. All right, so we're going to take a break right here, right now. You're listening into Influencers here on Guardian Talk Radio, 96.9 FM. I am your host, Lady Shima. We will come back with more after these words. Need your picture taken? Well, if you want it to look its best, then go to the best. It's Soya Studios, capturing your special events, portraits, passport, job, and visa photos. Plus, there's more. Also offering professional printing services of business cards, letterheads, signs, and banners. Opened Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a legacy. 28 years and growing. Located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road. Call 361-7786.
Start your day the right way with 7Cs.
Start your day the right way. Trust in the timeless tradition of 7Cs cod liver oil. 7Cs cod liver oil is a rich, natural source of omega-3, giving you the essential nutrients needed to promote good health and help make sure you're looking and feeling your very best. Whether it's one a day, high strength, or traditional, with 7Cs cod liver oil, you start your day the right way.
Start your day the right way with 7Cs.
Welcome back to Influencers, and I'm your host, Lady Shima. And with me today is influencer and leader of the Democratic National Alliance, a.k.a. the DNA, Mrs. Arinthia Komolafe. And we ended talking about the orange economy, and there is so much that comes under the umbrella of the orange economy. And I am very passionate about the orange economy because ooh. I myself, I'm
well, you
an
have
artist.
An ally in the DNA.
I'm an artist. And that's one of the things that has really grieved my spirit and my heart about being in the Bahamas. I am telling you, for many years, I woke up saying, okay, I'm going to drive to the airport and I'm going to leave. I'm just going to drive to the airport and I'm going to leave. And the reason for that was simply because I felt as though I was trapped. Like, I just can't really be Shima in this country because there are just so many limitations and you're always having to climb up the rough side of the mountain, right? Okay, as an artist. And so what is the Bahamas going to look like? And the crazy part about it is, per capita, when it comes to the Bahamas, we are one of the most talented countries on the face of the planet. But yet we have concurrent government administrations not really putting the orange economy to the fore. And there are billions of dollars untapped when it comes to the orange economy. What is the philosophy? What are the plans when it comes to the orange economy and the DNA?
Absolutely. 29.4 million jobs across the world, according to the IDB.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about a $1 trillion economy globally.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bahamas has yet to tap into it. I think a lot of it goes into our historical upbringing and the fact that, you know, many of us come from a slavery background or mm-hmm. a background where we didn't have access like our white counterparts. And so our parents wanted us to be lawyers
yes.
and doctors and teachers, you know.
So it came from a loving place. They wanted
yeah.
us to succeed.
Right.
Yeah.
So they frowned upon those less traditional careers.
That's correct.
And as you mm-hmm. said, per capita, we produce the most talent in the world.
I'm telling
and
you.
Imagine if we had a
oh
very
goodness.
Structured and organized
yes.
investment
mm-hmm.
into that talent, what we could be producing
mm-hmm.
to the world in music, in sports, in arts, and whatever the case may be. And so the orange economy is a major part of the DNA's platform for diversification of the Bahamian economy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those individuals who believe that we need to put tourism down and we need to put financial services down. I think we need to diversify tourism. And when we talked about that healthcare system,
mm-hmm.
one of the things we talk about is medical tourism. When we talk about sports and you see the education system feeding into a sports program
yes, yes.
for local consumption, but also for export,
mm-hmm.
like the Buddy Heels of the world and the Jonquil
exactly.
Jones and the Shawnees and the Stephen
mm-hmm.
Gardners and all of that. So medical, the tourism has a lot more that we have to explore there and expand
there. So much more. That's
correct.
But
the orange economy, that is going to be the game changer for the Bahamas. And the way that we have it structured, even in the platform that we've laid out in the DNA, because you're talking about exploring and exploiting all of the talent that we have in the arts, the visual arts, the performing arts, you know, persons who are dancing, persons who are singing, persons who are producing film and plays and poems and all of these different things, and handicraft and, and artwork, all of this. All of that is going to be concentrated, and that is why you see the arts program in the school system, because that is supposed to be the feeder into the orange economy. And
that's
so
good.
When we talk about, and there's so many spin-off jobs from there.
Of course, yes.
Right? In addition to those professionals in the orange economy like yourself, you also have, you got to get yourself all done up. So you need your makeup artist.
Yes.
You know, the guys need the barbers. You know, you need models who can take
of
pictures
course.
And, and display fashion design work and stuff like that.
That's so much.
And so the orange economy is intended to be a major pillar in the DNA platform. And we're looking at growing that economy to contributing at least 10% to gross domestic product within a 10-year period.
Now, with that said, what about the future of education in the Bahamas under a DNA-led government? What are your thoughts? What are your ideas? What are your plans in really equipping our young people to be the great future leaders of tomorrow?
Revolution. You know, when you hear a lot of the employers today speak, they say, we can't employ Bahamian students, Bahamian children.
Yes.
Bahamians.
I hear it often.
Because they don't have the skill set and they're not ready and they don't have the experience. And you know, it's funny, I was reading a political biography the other day, a local Bahamian political biography, and it was the same stories being complained back then. Oh, we can't hire Bahamians because it's sad that we are there, you know, some 4 or 5 decades later. But I will tell you this, the DNA's platform on education, I believe education is very, very, very passionate for me because education got me out, right? I saw in my own family line where my grandmother, who was a maid, and my grandfather and those who were taxi drivers, I saw my grandmother move to my mother and my father, who went into banking and a public service job, and then I was able to go to England to become an attorney and to come back home, all while going to public school for 12 years. That is what the public school system gave to me.
That's right.
And
I'm
this
glad
is what
that
they've
you
delivered.
Said that. Yes.
Right? So I know the power of education and what education does.
And
people.
Even through the public school sector.
Exactly.
Yes.
It takes you from one class, if you are interested and focused, it can take you from one class to the next class. What we must do is build a society, though, that does not leave any child behind. Now, I'm a very academic child, but if I, if my parents gave me the latitude, I probably would have taken the sports route.
Oh, really?
I would have if they gave me the latitude, but they didn't give me the latitude.
Oh, that's an interesting insight.
Or the arts route, right? So we frown, a lot of parents in Bahamian society still frown on those things. You know, a child dreaming about being a professional athlete or being a professional
artist.
We're
going to talk about that in a little bit.
Yes.
Yes.
So the education system that we speak about, I like to narrow it into an acronym called ACTS. We must ensure that every child that passes through the Bahamian education system can see themselves in the system. So ACTS, we have 4 A's. We have academics, athletics, arts, and agriculture, which we've been lying for years saying that our children do not want to farm and Bahamians do not want to farm. But we
not true.
We didn't expose them. We didn't give them the opportunity.
That's right.
Then we have 2 C's, which deals with character, because character building is very important. We have to build a society where we have integral and morally upright citizens.
That's correct.
And then chess, we found that studies show that children who learn chess do better in math and science grades, and they're better with problem solving, because chess is a game of strategy. And then we have 2 T's, which is technology, infusing technology into the system. So we have a blended learning system. And we also speak about, so you have technology and you have technical training. And this is a
very
part that I'm most
crucial,
very, very excited about, because growing up, there were some children who had access to technical training from grade 10 through 12, who were in the BEC program or, you know, who were in the Ministry of Works program or some, or maybe the police cadets or something
program,
like that.
Yes.
But all the time that children spend inside the classroom, Dealing with that skill set issue, we say that children from grade 10 through 12 should spend half the time in the classroom and the other portion on the job getting a skill.
Yes.
So that by the time as they leave high school, they have a skill.
So you're providing them with a foundation where they have options.
You must have options. So if you want to be a pro athlete, you go to, everybody will do the core. Everybody will leave the system knowing how to read, write, and count. Right? That is absolutely necessary.
Exactly.
But if you want to go the academic route, or if you want to go the athletic route, or if you want to go the farming route, if you want to be an artist, whether that's in performing arts, visual arts, whatever the case may be,
you can do that.
That opportunity is going to be there for you in the Bahamian education system. It is absolutely important.
Yeah, that's very good. And the orange economy, too, in a way, lends itself as cousin to dealing with our natural resources. You know, there's been talk of aragonite and dealing with our salt ponds. And I can go on and on and on with the wonderful treasures that we have as it relates to natural resources. But there's always been talk. How is the DNA? What are the DNA plans to really tap into what's been so untapped for so many years as it relates to really integrating that into our overall GDP?
Well, the good thing is that the lies that we've been sold over the years are now being exposed. That, first of all, we didn't have any natural resources and that our natural resource was sun, sand, and sea. And, of course, our people, which in fact they are resources, but they're not all the resources that we have. From a spiritual standpoint, I would say to you, I believe that when God establishes a geographical area and a people, whatever that group of people need to be able to survive and to be all that they can be is deposited on the land.
That's good.
So what we need to be successful and to be wealthy, which is our destiny, that is our spiritual and our divine destiny, it is in the land and it is in the sea. And it's also in the air, but it's in the land and it's in the sea. So, and whatever is there is first for the benefit of the people of the land, not for the foreigner, not for the person who may come and help you, right? Because the Bible says foreigners will come and build your walls, right? Not just, not for them.
That's a good insight. That's good.
But it is for the people. So there must be, and the DNA from the incest, it must be the people first. Right?
Yes.
Everything must be everything first, and we talked about this in the first session, it must be for the people. So the DNA from the inception always talked about a sovereign wealth fund, a true sovereign wealth fund, where all of the assets of the Bahamian people are deposited, and especially those that are in the land and in the sea. And I honestly believe this, that when the right administration gets inside that chair, all of the resources that have been lying dormant inside this country will finally come to the fore. Because again, it goes back to that principle of when God raises up a leader, and he raises up all leaders. But if he's raising up a leader for a time, for a people, and he said, now is your time to enter the promise, then all of the resources that were laying dormant will now come to life.
Okay.
And I believe that time is fast approaching. Hence now the idea of the DNA. You spoke about the fact that you were there 9 years ago for the launch, right? It was an idea that came before its time, right? But Victor Hugo said that there's nothing more powerful, not even armies in the world, nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And we believe now that the DNA's idea, the idea of the DNA, the time has come because the country must move forward. And I believe that's where the Lord has this nation at this point in time. So all agreements that are out there would have to be revised to be a part of this sovereign wealth fund for the benefit of the Bahamian people.
Okay.
Any wealth that is explored, any resource that is found beyond that will be deposited into that sovereign wealth fund for the benefit of the Bahamian people, all of the wealth that comes from it.
And how will that money, I'm going to just say it straight out, how will that money get into the wallets of the Bahamian?
The development of the Bahamian people, of course, you have some nations, different sovereign wealth funds function differently. You do have a lot of nations that do give a check over to their persons. I'm not sure about this whole idea and concept that everybody will be a millionaire or a multimillionaire in the country. But certainly the country should be and ought to be wealthy. And Bahamians should be living at a particular standard of living. A higher quality of life, a higher standard of life.
Straight across the board.
Across the board, regardless. Regardless of who you are and where you come from, you know, we're talking about first-class healthcare, first-class education, everything.
So you're going to have an increase in the minimum wage, $2.10 per week?
with the increase in the with, it's not linked to the sovereign wealth fund, but with the increase
not linked to the sovereign wealth fund. Just a question as it relates to the quality of life for Bahamians.
Absolutely, but I think you know what? If you create the opportunities in the economy, you see, you know, the problem is now is a lack of
we're
jobs.
We're coming right back to it.
And the job opportunities.
Yes.
Right. It's a lack of opportunities because right now you can only get a good government job.
The economic environment in which we find ourselves.
You need to improve the economic environment.
Yes, that's what
it is. It's as simple as that. You need to create more options. That's why our education system is geared to more options. The economies that we want to introduce or grow are geared to more options. So we talk about the orange economy. We talk about the diversification of the tourism product. We talk about the blue economy. We talk about the green economy.
We
talk about agriculture. All of these things. I mean, serious. You said we've had a lot of talk. That's true because we have elected a lot of talkers, right? It's time for action.
And with that said, though, let's talk a little bit about, I'm thinking about those many persons who worked at a Bahamar, who worked at Atlantis, who worked. And now we are in basically November. And the hotel is closed down since when? And so what would have been different for those same workers should Orinthia Komalafe have been the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas? What would you have done differently?
I think two things. And the pandemic really hit us back in March. And really, it didn't really hit us, but the impact hit us.
The impact, yes.
Right? Because the decision that was made at that time by the competent authority was to lock the entire nation down, in spite of the fact that numbers were not rising across the archipelago. We just took an outright decision. We're going to lock the entire archipelago down. And I think that that perhaps was not the best decision.
Okay.
Right? And even if it were, it should not have been for the time period that it lasted. Right. The first thing on two things I talked about. The first thing is you need an adequate stimulus package. I talked about the fact that in 2018, just 1 year after this administration came to office, they increased value-added tax by 12%. And we advised against that strongly, simply because we knew that the economy was still weak. You know, you were just getting ready to bring Bahama on stream. It would be difficult to extract all of that out
but
of
all
the
of that going on.
And it was going to send the cost of living up overnight, and it did.
But it did.
And a lot of businesses suffered as a result of it. And as a result, jobs were lost, right? So we advised against that. But this government spent the last two, 3 years putting us on an aggressive track to bring the deficit down, understanding that the economy was not its best. So now you find yourself coming out of two crises. You had the crisis of Hurricane Dorian, and now you have the crisis of the pandemic. I'm not saying that you just throw everything, caution out of the window and just spend like a drunken sailor. But you understand now that you're going to have to run largely a welfare society because your people cannot
work. Well,
that's
what's happening now. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But is it adequate enough what has been given? So to your question, what would Orinthia Komalafe have done, all of these persons that are home, and this is why we put the recommendation forward, and we're glad that the government followed through on it, that there needed to be greater social assistance to those persons who would not normally get unemployment benefits from the National Insurance Board.
Okay.
Persons who were in spin-off economies, particularly those in the hospitality industry.
That's true.
Who were self-employed and would not be able to claim unemployment benefits. And so, but that needed to be, you needed to foresee that at least through to December 31st, 2020, and then reassess again after that.
Okay.
Because you understand that things were worsening as the months went on. Even if they were not worsening in the Bahamas, they certainly were worsening in our number one trade partners, neck of the woods, which was the United States of America. So that is the first thing. And we're talking about assistance for, and we gave these recommendations, assistance for light, assistance for water, assistance for food, assistance for rent, and income replacement. It may not be 100% income replacement, but sufficient
enough.
Well, I'm
sure they won't be able to do that even there, but at least.
Yeah, just a portion, right? I don't feel confident that the funds that we set aside, you know, and I feel that we took a little, like if you have an issue, normally $20 million is not good enough for you under normal circumstances. Well, you're in a pandemic now with everything shut down. you needed to at least multiply that by 3 to 5 times in order to be able to look after at least half your population in different areas. Because not the same person who needs rental assistance may not need to keep
that
the light
true.
On and so on
that
and so forth. Right? So a stimulus package that was sufficient enough and adequate enough to be able to sustain the vulnerable in your society for an extended period of time, at least 6 months to a year. That's the first thing. The second thing was we came out of a budget exercise for 2020-2021. And as I indicated in a statement, it was very disappointing. It was underwhelming, the budget communication. There was nothing revolutionary in there. We missed the opportunity to rethink and to reimagine what the Bahamas could be. And we spoke about those things that we could have started to make the investment in, whether it was the orange economy, true investment into agricultural development and sustaining ourselves, not the couple of million dollars that was thrown at it. You know, if this is an opportunity where everybody around the world is borrowing, everybody around the world is going to be running big deficit governments. So it's
very
not
true.
Going to come as a surprise to your creditors or to even credit rating agencies that you have to borrow a significant amount of funds. But you must always ensure that those funds are actually targeted and geared in specific areas. So a portion of it would have been to be able to keep that social safety net there for a good period of time. But the other portion of it would have been to invest in new industries and to expand existing sectors
that's
of the economy.
What do you think about the rebounding of the tourism sector and the need for the diversification of the tourism product here in the Bahamas after, you know, that this big blow that we are enduring right now?
It's going to be crucial. I think we had a lot of missed opportunities. I liked the direction that we were going in before this administration came in with sports tourism and the fact that we were hosting the IAAF relays and we had the Popeye Bowl that was coming here, and I patronized all of those things because I'm a sports fanatic.
All right.
But Bahamians typically are sports fanatics and we canceled that. We canceled the IAAF relays, which I thought was a gross mistake because we had the market on relays. When you think about relays in track and field, global track, you think about the Bahamas.
The Bahamas, of course.
Right?
Golden
so
gold.
The diversification of the Bahamian economy is absolutely necessary. We talk about sports tourism. So we would pick back up where the last administration would have left off in terms of that that trend that we were moving in terms of. And I think when I talked about the missed opportunity, I was glad that we were able to revive the NBA season. And when they were looking for where to go to create the bubble, the Bahamas could have and should have been a prime spot for them to create that bubble here, right? Because we've been entertaining sports franchise, particularly in the NBA.
As a matter of fact, we were supposed to have been.
We were, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
You know, so
missed opportunity.
You know, so many and such major missed opportunities at that. And with that said, now we're going to wrap up the show and let's talk just a little bit about election 2022. And do you really believe, you know, it's one thing. I know you say that you believe that you are called. You sound very prepared. You sound more than able, capable when it comes to your intellect, when it comes to your background, et cetera, et cetera. There's another part, though, that makes up this whole equation, and that's the electorate. The electorate has to be ready to say, now we are tired of bouncing from this one party FNM to the PLP. It's just more of the same. From, of course, we know of the great contributions that the original PLP has made to the overall advancement and development of the Bahamas. But really looking at where the Bahamas is now and looking at what happened over the past 10 to 15 years when it comes to governance in this country, do you believe that they're really going to go into that ballot box and say, I'm not going to go for the red. I'm not going to go for the gold or the yellow. I'm going to go for the green? You really believe that is going to happen?
I absolutely believe that.
100%. For 2022?
Or whenever the election is called. But it'll be before, by or before 2022.
Let me make sure that you're understanding my question, Mrs. Arinthia Komolafe. I am asking you if you believe that he or she, they're going to go into the ballot box and they are not going to put a tick to that torch. They're not going to put a tick to that yellow. They're going to put a tick to the green, and they're going to put so many ticks to the green that you all, the DNA, will become, first time in the history of the Bahamas, the third party now. Not the PLP, not the FNM. You're going to become the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. This is going to happen in real life in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. You really believe this?
I absolutely believe that, 100%, wholeheartedly. And I would tell you, there are going to be people who are going to tick for the torch. There are going to be people who are going to tick for the finger, the three fingers up. But I'll tell you, the vast majority of the Bahamian people are going to tick for the lighthouse.
Okay. For the lighthouse.
And I'll tell you, again, I go back to that point. This is an idea whose time has come.
Mm-hmm.
We've been on a pendulum now from 1997, really, back and forth between the PLP and the FNM. Since 1997, neither the PLP nor the FNM has been able to maintain a consecutive term in governance. It's set, and over that period of time as well, their base has been declining,
mm-hmm.
moving away from whether it was 50% and going down to 45, now to 40, and in some cases below that. The PLP did not even clock 40%
mm-hmm.
in the last general election.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you the swing voters have grown.
Mm-hmm.
The voting bloc that is the largest right now are the young people
mm-hmm.
who are neither tied to the PLP or the FNM.
The millennials.
And they are extremely frustrated with where they are as a nation and the system of governance that we have going on. Then you have another block of Bahamians who are very frustrated with a lot of the things that are being exposed now
mm-hmm.
insofar as our natural resources or the type of governance that we've been subjected to over the past couple of decades. And they're just looking for a body that is not stained or tainted like the PLP or the FNM, which both are stained and tainted by their legacies, which, as you noted, some of it has been good, but in recent times it has been a bad taste in the mouths of the Bahamians. And they are looking for something new and mm-hmm. something different, something revolutionary, and something where the message is speaking to mm-hmm. who they are and where they should be as mm-hmm. a nation. You can't have the PLP and the FNM come because it will just be lip service. They do not have the moral authority to speak about this new Bahamas
mm.
that we speak about, because they have each had sufficient amount of time to be able to take us to where it is that we need to be. And I can tell you that as we are on the ground, the traction that we are getting, particularly among the young people who, as I said, are not swayed by either red or yellow, and they're not voting the way their parents tell them to vote.
Mm-hmm.
They frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they say? This ain't it. This ain't making sense.
Okay.
This one ain't making sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or this one is too old. Some of them can't see themselves voting for somebody who's 60 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody who's going to be 70 something. Mm-hmm. Because in their minds, how can you relate to what okay. I'm going through?
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So that is a large block, but even more so, I'm telling you, Bahamians are so frustrated. You know, all they're saying at this point for the DNA is we want to see your candidates, and they're ready to go. And mm-hmm. our candidates are already out there on the ground.
You have a full slate
working
at this time?
We're moving toward a full slate.
Okay.
Right? And the pandemic has slowed us down into our efforts,
mm-hmm.
but we have more than half the slate already.
Okay.
To go.
Okay.
On the ground. And persons are already on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already interacting with their constituents and getting the necessary training
mm-hmm.
that they need to be able to be as successful as they can be
are
as aspiring legislators.
Are you open to a possible alliance with some of the other third parties out there? Your Cassius Storts, your servant leaders, your...
Well, I'll tell you, over the last couple of years, we've had multiple conversations with multiple parties, with multiple individuals. Right? And everybody is of their own belief.
Okay.
And
okay.
even in spite of the fact that we have had those conversations, we have never lost focus.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to do what it is that we have to do. And the DNA is coming from a place of strength because we, by many intents and by many accounts, and for all intents and purposes, are perhaps the most successful third party that the country has seen in terms of being able to be branded as one of the major political parties alongside the PLP and the FNM.
Mm-hmm.
When people talk about political parties, they say PLP, FNM, and DNA.
Yeah, that is
and
true.
So that goes to the strength of the work that has been done by persons before. Right? And of course, you would have played a role in that because, as you said, in terms of dealing with the marketing and the promotion,
mm-hmm.
the way the brand was presented,
mm-hmm.
it came out as a strong brand and
mm-hmm.
people believed in it. But like I said, at that point, people were wondering, okay, this is probably good. We can take a chance, but they didn't want to take a chance because it was too new.
Mm-hmm.
And you needed to show that stickability, that longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to do that. right? And we're going into our third general election. Mm-hmm. Our founding leader stepped down from politics coming out of the 2017 general elections, and persons thought that that would be it. Mm-hmm. Because in the minds of a lot of people, the DNA was Bran, and mm-hmm. Bran was the DNA. But what the persons who were in that party showed was that this idea was bigger than any one or two or three individuals.
Okay.
But this idea was about saving a nation. Mm-hmm. And taking us to where it was that we needed to be.
Okay, so the idea of the DNA is about more than just one person, more than just about a Branville McCartney, but it's about saving a nation. You heard it here on Influencers by the lady herself, the leader of the Democratic National Alliance, Mrs. Arinthia Komolafe. Thank you for a very provocative and insightful conversation.
Thank you for the invite.
You're so very welcome. That's going to be all here on Influencers. Until next time, blessings.
Influencers was brought to you by
7Seas. Start your day the right way. Sawyer Studios, located in the Flowers Plaza, Carmichael Road West. Carib Construction. Real Time Sound Studios. And Global Transformation Media, transforming you from the inside out.